All right, this is the last thing you're going to hear tonight. It's a happy song, but it's got its complicated words, so just listen really hard. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, he's a fucking motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, he's a total motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck him, fuck the motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucking Pope.
And yes, this is Here We Stand, back live after over a month. I'm your host, regular host, Kevin Annett. The Pope song, Tim Minchin. Well, that's always a popular item. I remember when I was talking to some of the folks in Ireland who are going to be on the air with us today, one of them said, that's my favorite song, you know? It's a former Catholic. There are a lot of ex-Catholics these days, and we're working with them. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons that I've been off the air and playing reruns and other programs over the last month is I've been on an extended tour in Europe and beyond, and as a result of that, meeting with all sorts of similar-minded people and activists, having closed meetings with people in a lot of different countries. In the course of that, we formed six new common law action groups in Ireland, the Netherlands, France, Italy, and Britain. And equally important, probably more important, is the fact that there's now two new ITCCS offices formed, a Latin America ITCCS office and a Russian and Serbian one, staffed by local people who speak Spanish and Russian. ITCCS, for people tuned in for the first time, International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State, ITCCS.org. Urge you to go to that site. There'll be all the recent postings, including what today's show is all about. Now, the sentiments of that opening song, I think, are appropriate today, because that could be what a lot of the Chilean Catholic bishops are feeling these days. One of the items in the news that prompted today's show is the fact that the Vatican and Pope Francis, Jorge Bergoglio, is trying to get the Chilean bishops to all take the fall for covering up child rape and child trafficking within the Catholic Church. There's a lot of analogies between what's going on in Chile and Ireland. These two most conservative, traditional Catholic nations, in fact, are in the center of a huge uproar, a revolt within the Catholic Church, because in response, all 32 Catholic bishops have tendered their resignation. That was a result of pressure from Rome. Now, of course, that's an age-old tactic. The Vatican tries to get the local officials to take the fall. They move people around, hide the child rapists, and they look good in the process. They're saying, you see, they're taking responsibility. The Pope gets to act like Mr. Squeaky clean guy by saying, lecturing the Chilean bishops that they weren't taking enough responsibility, that they were being negligent about child abuse. Well, folks, crimen solicitanus is the policy. You can read it at our book, murderbydecree.com. It's reprinted in there. That policy says the Catholic bishops are supposed to cover it up. It's a standing policy. When children are raped, the police are not to be told. The victim and the victimizer are silenced. The whole thing is shoved under the rug. That's standard policy. Now, knowing that policy that the Pope stands by, why would he then lecture people for enforcing it and being negligent about protecting children? So you see, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth, of course, getting the local bishops to take the fall and the local priests for it. Well, a lot of them aren't going along with this now, and in fact, one thing the ITCCS is doing through its Latin American office now is this recently, just a few days ago, they issued a letter to the bishops saying, look, you have a month with which to break off this complicity with crimes in the Catholic Church. After that, you're going to be held personally responsible. That letter is going out in Spanish to all the dioceses of the Catholic Church. You can read it. Again, it's online. I won't paraphrase it here. It's online at itcs.org. Just recently posted, actually. It's if you go to the latest posting, it's entitled Standing Down from a Criminal Association, a Legal Notice and Emancipation Order Issued to the Catholic Bishops of Chile. Now, the response, of course, we're not requiring or depending on the hierarchy in the Catholic Church to do the right thing. They are playing the same game. You can't get into the position unless you help cover up these crimes. We're looking to we the people, and that's the theme of today's show. We have with us today participants in a very important historic event. On May 15th in Dublin, a common law assembly charter was signed by a dozen men and women. That assembly charter established a self-governing assembly which created a common law court and legislature. That's the constitutional basis for the launching of what's known as the grand jury, an Irish grand jury that's going to be looking into a number of different crimes, including criminal collusion by church and state in Ireland, a corporation called TUSLA, which is openly trafficking children for money, the absence of the rule of law, due process, any of that going on. These are some of the issues that the Irish grand jury, convened on May 15th, will be looking into. We have with us today people who are going to be submitting evidence to that grand jury. And the grand jury has the power to convene a common law court. As a matter of fact, under the common law tradition of grand juries, which is most exemplified in America, grand juries have the power to not only subpoena and indict people, but actually make arrests, bring people into court, and convene themselves as a common law court if they so choose. That's the power of the people to investigate the different branches of government, including the judiciary if they're corrupt, which is certainly the case in Ireland, as you'll hear. And we, the people, form in our own courts to bring justice and to not only issue a verdict, but to enforce that verdict. Now, we've proven the power of that over the last number of years when we forced four top Catholic officials, including Pope Benedict and the so-called Black Pope, Adolfo Pichon, head of the Jesuits, all of them to step down after the common law verdict was issued involving their guilt. And so we have shown in practice that it works. The Irish grand jury is going to start that process and has started that process now. So we're going to hear about them in a couple of minutes when they're on the air. A couple of other announcements before that. The folks are with us. But a couple of other announcements. As we mentioned a few shows back, one of the West Coast journalists who has been involved in exposing crimes in Canada of church and state, Bob Hansen, was forced from his program at CHOY Radio in Nanaimo. After he did a series of three interviews with me, yours truly, about the crimes at the Nanaimo Indian Hospital, where Aboriginal children were experimented on, sterilized, killed over 40 years, 40 or 50 years, by the United Church, Canadian military, and other CIA-funded researchers. Bob Hansen and now two other programmers have all been forced by CHOY, which apparently is in the process of being taken over by private corporate interests. This is what we see all over, public radio being taken down, and the outstanding journalists forced from the air because of this whole corporate agenda, and of course they need to cover up genocide. So if you folks want more information on that, contact CHOY Radio in Nanaimo and ask them, and Jesse Woodward, the person who's forcing all these people off the air, ask them, why are they forcing these outspoken journalists off the air and shutting down public radio? Also, in that, further on that, Murder by Decree, our website, has been taken down for the last couple of weeks. You folks might have noticed that murderbydecree.com is not accessible anymore. We're still trying to get to the heart of why that is. If not through the present server, we'll have that site up again soon. So just to know, we are under a direct assault these days, no doubt because of the launching of this Irish grand jury and other related news. So we'll have more of that in the conclusion of the year, but I understand now that folks are with us live from Ireland. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Well, it's good to have you all back here. By agreement, we've agreed that we're not going to have people name names today. I do want you, though, to go into some detail, not only about the issues that the Irish grand jury is going to be investigating, but something about the grand jury itself, its powers, and what you hope to achieve by it. Now, I know that one of you folks wants to kind of kick off, so why don't I just let you go in the order that you decided.
Okay, Kevin, we just have a couple of statistics about what's after been happening in this country. In 2015, the national middle income was €20,000 per annum, making the at-risk of poverty threshold 12,000 per annum or 229.97 per week. The percentage of Irish people living in consistent poverty in 2015 was 8.7%, up from 4.2% in 2008. The consistent poverty rate for the unemployed in 2015 was 26.2%, up from 9.7% in 2008. Children remain the most vulnerable age group, with 11.5% living in constant poverty in 2015. Consistent poverty in single-parent households continues to rise, increasing from 17.8% in 2008 to 26.2% in 2015. The Irish economy was worth $350 billion in 2017. 750,000 people are living in poverty in Ireland on under €218 per week. Over 100,000 people who work in Ireland are still living in poverty. Almost 139,000 children are living in consistent poverty. Ireland's homeless figures has passed 10,000 in 2018. We have approximately 50,000 empty homes in Irish cities alone. That's not including the countryside. That's 30 empty homes for every homeless adult. The number of homeless adults and children is at a record high. It has risen from 7,148 in December 2016 to over 10,000 in 2018. And over 3,500 children are currently homeless. These are not the latest updated figures, as the latest updated figures have been sitting on the Minister of Housing's desk since the 2nd of May, and he's still refusing to release them to the public. The National Treatment Purchase Fund, according to our national TV station here in Ireland, on the 30th of December 2016, the total number of people waiting on hospital inpatient or daycare lists was 81,015. The Irish cancer rate is the second highest in the world, as reported by one of our national newspapers. On average, an average of 40,000 new cases of cancer are diagnosed each year. Our national debt is €208 billion. Our external debt is just over €2 trillion. But yet the investment in foreign securities has risen to €2.3 trillion. As at the end of 2016, but their assets and financial services centre is €4.8 trillion. The amounts paid out for the bank bailout are to Anglish Irish Bank, €29.3 billion. Irish Nationwide Bank, €5.4 billion. Allied Irish Bank, €18.4 billion. Bank of Ireland, €4.7 billion. The Educational Building Society were given €2.4 billion. And the Irish Life and Permanent Bank were given €2.7 billion. This was the start of our 42% overall European debt payment. The total cost to the taxpayer of the bank bailout currently runs at €85 billion and rising, while the bondholders are paying nothing.
Incredible. The whole country's being bled dry, it sounds like. Now, I know you've... Folks have also prepared information on the pillaging and the pension reserve fund. Do you want to talk about that? Who's ever next?
That's correct. Regarding the National Pension Reserve Fund, it was it's there to protect the most vulnerable in the future. And at the 31st of December 2012, the fund's total stood at $14.7 billion. The discretionary portfolio, the investment of which remains Commission's responsibility, was valued at $6.1 billion, 41% of total. The directed portfolio investments made in Irish financial institutions for public policy reasons, at the direction of the Minister for Finance, was valued at $8.6 billion, 59% of total. Altogether, the total value would be €8.6 billion. And they've invested in the government has actually pillaged away the National Pension Reserve Fund to vulture funds, speculating on the markets, and all this money has gone missing now. In 2009, the Minister for Finance decided to utilise part of the assets of the fund to assist in dealing with financial crisis facing Ireland. The investment of the National Pension Reserve Fund and Miscellaneous Provisions Act of 2009 amended that the NPRF Act to enable the NPRF to be used for purposes of bank recapitalisation. It empowers the Minister for Finance to direct the Commission to invest in specified securities or credit institutions where, having consulted the Governor of the Central Bank and the Financial Regulator, he decides such a direction is necessary in the public interest for either or both the following purposes.
Right.
The Credit Institution Stabilisation Act 2010, the CISA Act, enacted in December 2010, significantly amended this legislation governing the fund. The CISA Act gave the Minister for Finance significant powers in relation to the fund, including the power to reduce or suspend the annual exchequer contribution to the National Pension Reserve Fund in any of the years 2012 to 2013.
Right.
You could also direct the Commission to invest in Irish government securities and vulture funds, direct the Commission to make payments directly to the Exchequer in the years 2011, 12 and 2013, where it appears to him to be desirable to do so in the interest of funding capital expenditure by the Exchequer. The Minister exercised these powers in relation to suspension of the Exchequer contribution and to fund making payments directly to the Exchequer.
Okay, now this is all important. It's kind of painting the background of why you're doing the grand jury. I mean, this gutting of the economy for the super rich. Selling off of public assets. Anyone want to talk about that? And what is this thing called NAMA?
Okay, Kevin, hi.
Hello.
Ballyhea says no, examined issues of bonds when steps were taken to recapitalize all Irish banks. Their early findings show the central bank had embarked on money destruction of some 28 billion promissory notes. I'd just like to give your listeners a little background into Ballyhea. A group of Irish activists went to a meeting with Fine Gael. They were holding their Fine Gael Ardesh, and they saw a banner in the corner. Ballyhea says no. So the group went over to speak with the members of Ballyhea, which are a small village down in Cork, right? And they were shocked to find that Ballyhea had been marching since 2011. And we said, like, marching where? They said, we march up and down a small village in County Cork every Sunday at the same time to try to highlight the problems, but we're getting nowhere. Mm-hmm. And they told the activist at the time that if Dublin says no, don't set up, but the country will never wake up. So the first week they marched was Easter Sunday 2013. I joined the following week and I met a few of the activists that were there, and we marched in the city. I think there was probably 11 of us. We kept going for 5 years, but this is where I'm leading into now. Ballyhea says no, examined issues of bonds when steps were taken to recapitalise the Irish banks. Their early findings showed the central bank had embarked on the destruction of some 28 billion promissory note bonds. As a result, calculations of payment to bondholders and speculators were to be paid, and debt with over 40-year payments term, as such, 80 billion principal plus interest. Ex-Finance Minister Michael Noonan, who was dying of cancer at the time, changed promissory notes into bonds, putting this debt onto the taxpayer.
Right.
The state should be responsible. Sovereign bonds issue schedule right. 2014-2018, 0.5 billion forward slash year equals total of 2.5 billion. 2019-2023, euros billion year, total payment 5 billion. 2024-2013, euros, total payment 16 billion. 2032, 1.5 billion, total 25 billion.
Okay, now let me just jump in here for a minute, because we've been talking a lot about economic figures, but what we're really talking about is how the country is being gutted systematically. It's a criminal conspiracy by corporations, banks, the state. Let's bring it back to the issue now, knowing this stuff. to the grand jury investigation and why the courts aren't an avenue for this. We want to bring in the whole question of TUSLA, child abuse, church-based child trafficking, too. I know there's another speaker who's going to address that. But let me ask John, why don't you talk a little bit about the judiciary and why the grand jury was necessary?
Okay, in understanding our judiciary, examination indicates that our judiciary is not upholding common law principles. One of the biggest factors is it's implementing statutory law initiated by the legislator or our middle organ of state. Obviously, we have three organs of state. And our legislator, research indicates that our legislator, since the financial crash around our figures tonight, indicates that the government have been implementing hundreds upon hundreds of statutes. Now, in making this research, it's quite clear the level of deprivation and poverty that we tried to establish around the economic figures tonight. I mean, we've just touched on some of these figures. These figures are very, very intense. They go on to other levels and other extremes. The emphasis for a grand jury is we are being brought to our knees. Our community and our society is failing. Our state is failing its obligations to ensure a strong running economy, and it's pillaging it all away. Extensive research again indicates that they are at will giving away our natural resources. Ireland is very rich in infrastructure concerning minerals, forestry, fishing. We have oil and gas. For the size of our island, we're probably one, if not one of the wealthiest countries in Europe. And yet, through our discussion tonight on the show, the people of our nation are suffering, and suffering badly. It's quite clear the government in question are not meeting their obligations. Concerning the law, there's complete breaches of our constitution. Their obligations to the citizens of this country reflect around fundamental rights and family rights and the way we live today, that we all understand we have to pay some tax and we have to have a little bit of economy to make it strong. But indications show us that there's criminal fraud going on here. There's criminal misappropriation of public funding. Again, more research indicates that the Irish government, like many European governments, have a huge association with the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank. And these, when research is done on these corporate entities, it's clear that they have an agenda to pillage. They have an agenda to basically destroy the infrastructure of, in this case, of our country and many other countries. This is verified too, that the IMF in particular have destroyed the infrastructure of Jamaica. Okay.
Okay. Now hold that, John. So, if you don't mind for a minute, hold that statement about destroying the infrastructure. Part of the infrastructure they destroy is the family and destroying people's ability to fight back. So let's talk about that. Yeah. Bring it to the issue of child trafficking, TUSLA, and that. Could we do that for a minute?
Absolutely.
Hi, John. Kevin, sorry. The stealing of our children and child trafficking has been going on for hundreds of years in Ireland. It started off with institutions like the Magnan Laundries, Toon Babies, Artane Boys, Benny House, many, many more. In 2014, a new state-run institution called TUSLA came into Ireland. And in the children's referendum, and people voted yes for the referendum, it actually voted yes for the state to actually own 51% of your child. and leaving the parents only owning 49%. The statistics for children that were trafficked out of Ireland in 2017, there was 10 minor females and 9 minor males trafficked from Ireland. They were sent to England, they were sent to America, and they were sent to Northern Ireland. Just the article that they repealed for the child's referendum was Article 42A of the Constitution. It recognises that all children have rights and pledges to protect those rights by law. It allows the court to identify the rights for children on a case-to-case basis. This provision will enable the courts to develop new thinking in relation to children's rights and to break with past decisions, some of which have resulted in bad outcomes for children. And this clarifies how and when the state can step in to protect your children. It is an amended version of an existing article in the Constitution. More importantly, it shifts the trigger of intervention from focusing solely on the parents, failure to impact on the children. But these people are actually coming in and taking innocent children from their homes with no paperwork or no warrants or absolutely nothing else. With the help of An Garda Síochána in all them cases also. And a lot of this has to do with the church also. The church, since the 1990s, actually were the first ones that started abusing children in Ireland. And the allegations of church collusion in covering up numerous sexual scandals emerged since 1992, in the Church of Ireland, has been beset by scandals that reveal a historic and systematic impulse on the part of the hierarchy to prevent embarrassing controversy, regardless of the cost in terms of victims' pain and suffering. I think they paid out like some 1.2 billion in funds for the people that were abused. And actually a lot of bishops and all are actually stepping down from a lot of churches now over this scandal that's going on.
I wanted to ask you too, how much does TUSLA get from the government for every child that they traffic? Is there a figure?
Yeah, well, the Irish government gets 20 grand per child. And also the foster parents with the children get between 315 and 352 euro per week per child. That's right. Not including monthly fees and fees to do stuff with the kids and whatever else. They get the children's allowance and everything that the kids are entitled to, these foster parents get also.
Right.
And TUSLA, the agency themselves, they got 40.6 million euro of a grant in March of 2018, and that is not including any monies that they got from their sponsors.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible when you look at it. And let's talk now, we've looked at all these issues. Let's talk about how it relates to what the grand jury is going to do. Let's open it up for everyone just to jump in and talk about this. What are the things you hope to bring out in the grand jury, and where is it going to lead? Are you going to name particular people? Have you talked about that yet, and how is it going to operate?
Yes, we have, Kevin.
We have about 13 people on board for the jury already, Kevin. That's from our own area. I'm not too sure if anyone else is looking to get involved or anything, but there's 13 that we have already that is willing to...
I think at our last meeting, more news broke that a lot of interest is developing on the convening of this grand jury. It's quite clear all these issues that we're facing here in Ireland and these issues many people are facing globally has to be examined, has to be examined on a new level. Concerning issues of enforcement in dealing with the criminality here, I mean, obviously we've a lot of work to get through on that and to examine these factors. How ironic that the pillaging is happening of every man, woman and child in the country. maybe it's time that, you know, we look at pillaging All Is Well back and getting a balanced, fair and transparent way of living that has long been lost. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, too, that, I mean, one of the issues that really made the news all over the world is when they found those 800 babies' remains in the cistern in Chum. County Galway. Now, do you want to talk a little bit about that? I know there's been talk about perhaps forming a particular investigative focus there to try to find out who exactly put those babies there, who was part of the cover-up. We know Cardinal Sean Brady stepped down when it came out about his role in the cover-up. Any information on that? Any new news about that?
Well, I have successfully retrieved some information. I haven't had the opportunity to look into it yet, but it appears to be very, very intense, the investigation around the Chum babies. We're looking into a lot of content and a lot of material at the moment. Concerning that issue, our content material is proven relentless at the moment. It's intense. Our group is working very well together at the moment to look into various issues and trying to assess the material that we're you know, achieving. Mm-hmm. The work, we're not afraid of it. We're all hands in, and we hope to develop it, you know, in more detail. Some further news in the last...
Breaking news.
Yeah.
We found the lady, Kevin, who's working to expose the Chum babies.
She made the news. I forgot her name.
No, we found her. We actually found her ourselves.
Oh, good. Yeah.
So we need to be in contact with her.
Excellent. Now, I don't want to compromise at all what you're doing, because I know a lot of this has to stay off the radar for now. But yeah, go ahead.
Just on the Chum babies, Kevin, and back to the Irish government as well. These were 796 babies that were aged between 2 days old and up to 6 months old, as far as I'm aware, possibly older. But the Irish government as well wouldn't even have the decency to give these babies a proper burial or a proper memorial site. Instead, they stick a bit of timber up with all these babies' names engraved in black permanent marker onto a piece of timber and expect that to be a redress for all the children that were murdered through the institutions in Ireland.
Well, exactly. And, you know, the standing policy in the Catholic Church is to cover it up. And if you don't cover it up, you're excommunicated. So, I mean, that's criminal conspiracy right there. And
I'd like to elaborate a point. It's quite clear that the cover-up has been relentless and endless at the hands of government in association with the Church. There's multiple reports available. Some of them we have. Some of them we're trying to analyse at the moment. The investigative side of what's going around the institutional abuse of our children and adults as well, if it be said, it's a full blown attack on our community. You know, at the level of the elitist, the clear elitist of the Church, endorsed and protected by policies of the government. And the people of our nation are coming out second best on what's been happening here for, as one of my colleagues said there earlier, verified going on decades upon decades now.
Right.
Yeah.
And, of course, the responsibility goes right to the top. And I noticed the Pope, so-called Pope Francis, is coming to Dublin May, August 25th, 26th.
Please spare us.
We understand that he is going out of his way to visit a food shelter on his papal visit.
And, well, maybe he'll give him a few billion dollars from the Vatican Bank. What do you think?
Absolutely, and obviously he'll have the full backing of our media here in Ireland, as it being a tremendous event that he's airing concern for the homeless. Mm. and the people that are starving here in Ireland. It's very, very misleading.
And I couldn't imagine how much that's going to cost and who's going to pay for it. I believe, like, I would say the taxpayer will probably foot that bill as well, Kevin.
Well, I know there's kind of a standing figure. We know this from when Pope Benedict came to London in 2010, and there was like 20,000 of us to meet him and protest his presence. It was great, protest the Pope Day, but it came out in the London Daily News that week that there's a standard bill the Vatican presents to governments when the Pope comes to visit. It's between 10 and 20 million euros minimum, visit.
I'd like to verify on that there is news that it could potentially cost as much as 60 million.
Unbelievable.
What the reports of the levels of security they're arguing for his papal visit, that it could reach as much as 60 million euro.
I've also read some disagreements about the Pope's visit and the public having to pay for it, because it would mean it would be open to any religious denomination to come to the country, and actually the state would have to pay for it, you know, that way. You kind of open the floodgates for more bills to the taxpayer, you know, that way. But it's very, very small opposition, but you have to see, like, they're, you know, they have to be unbiased about it, you know.
Well, you know, it's interesting that when you go onto their site, when they're talking about him doing a mass in Phoenix Park in Dublin on Sunday the 26th of August, it has the appearance that people can get tickets, but what that really is a screening process so they can know who's coming and who isn't. And
exactly.
They can control that. So,
We understand that anybody that wishes to try and attend this event in the Phoenix Park will be charged 60 euros per head. That's the ticket.
They actually pay the 60 euro to go to a 3-day event before the Pope arrives. So it's like a screening process.
To brainwash exactly.
It might actually be cheaper to go and see the Rolling Stones.
Well, just for you guys probably know this, but for listeners who might not know this, there is a standing arrest warrant out for Jorge Bergoglio on two indictments. When he was a bishop, an archbishop in Argentina, he did traffic children and political prisoners being held by the military government there, who he was friends with and working with. And his participation in the so-called Ninth Circle cult. Both of those indictments, there's a standing common law arrest warrant out for him, which the police, the Garda, are obligated under natural law to enforce, or they're obstructing justice if they don't. So just to put that out there.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the way it should be. But again, through research and global research, all our government, all our public bodies, effectively, our Garda in this case, our government departments, they're all corporations. They have corporate interests. This is not about addressing justice at all. I think this is where our effort is to try and address convening a grand jury here in Ireland, to try and address, try and get redress at a level of common law jurisdiction here in Ireland. While our state and our corrupt judiciary has continued to work alongside our legislator to implement statutory law, which is a 6th century law. We discovered recently that it was initiated here in Ireland some 800 years ago, where our common law was lost. It was made to be lost. It was described as Poynings' law. Poynings' law, the 17th.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, John, because you know traditionally the hold the Catholic Church has had in Ireland is it's been seen as almost a symbol of nationalism against the English, and yet it was the Normans who brought the Church of Rome into Ireland and suppressed the traditional Gaelic Christian Church there.
Absolutely, and that's what's taken hold here for hundreds of years. Again, in recent days, we've been discovering that the church, what you read earlier today,
paid out millions to to people for rape and abuse that they were put through the years. And
they also made it clear that they were going to control people's lives here. The great, through some research of history, the great Eamon de Valera endorsed the papal values of Pope Pius VI, if I had the name correct. And again, through documentation we have, this was verified that he had a great, he endorsed the Vatican to, in their principles, to input and rule over our nation here in Ireland. Clearly, there's also a law
in England, and I think it's by analogy the same in Ireland, that way back in the Middle Ages it was called the Law of Premonure. And Premonure said if a foreign power like the Church of Rome was seen to be interfering with the laws of England, or in this case Ireland, that was an act of treason. So any employee of the church, any bishop, any priest who's working for the laws of Rome rather than Ireland is actually a traitor and can be tried for treason. Now, I mean, this definitely in the case of Crimen Solicitanus, where the policy says you will cover up child abuse, that's going against the child protection laws in Ireland. Go ahead.
The thing about that is, Kevin, in our country, in 1919, 32 counties voted on a constitution that's in play, But due to partition, the government for the last 100 years have used the 1937 constitution, 1922, sorry, apologies, 1922 constitution, which wasn't voted on by the 32 counties. You cannot get rid of a constitution of a country if you do not have the 32 counties that voted for it in the first place. So and unless they get rid of partition in Ireland and Ireland is unified, until then, we cannot change anything in the constitution, and these referendums that they keep on popping out of everywhere, and these super powers that they have to get rid of the National Pension Reserve Fund and rob the people of Ireland and keep on robbing the people of Ireland, they're getting away with it because they're lying to the Irish people. They're basically professional robbers in suits.
Right. Now, and in other words, their acts are all unconstitutional. There's no constitutional basis for anything they're doing, right?
Absolutely. Can I elaborate on my colleague's point there? The sovereign constitution. We've got something very, very important here to analyze, because the sovereign constitution of 1919, written here in Ireland, was the basis for our sovereignty. We were a complete island of 32 counties. And of course, when the British came in then with the Irish Free State constitution, they, as my colleague just mentioned, partitioned our island, six counties, 26 counties and six counties, what we know to be the north of Ireland. And as a result, our sovereignty was taken away from us, or was lost. Now, what's interesting about our present constitution, and I know I talk quite a bit about the constitution because I think it has a lot of relevance to what's going on. They give the illusion that we're sovereign. They verify in the articles, particularly in Article 6 of Bunratt and Héireann, we've got something very interesting here where they say the government's authority derives from the people. But then it goes on to say in Part 2 of Article 6, only if we say so, only if we legislate. So in other words, if you vote for a democratic government, we will decide whether your argued authority or what you believe our argued authority is, whether it'll happen that way or not. So we're dealing with complete manipulation and deception around the issues of democracy and sovereignty, which has long been lost through the history books here in Ireland.
That's a really important point. And I'm assuming that the grand jury that you've convened is going to be standing on the principles of the original 1922 Constitution and not the existing one. Is that honest to say?
We'll be standing on the principles of the 1919 Constitution. We've something very interesting here, because it was ratified under the 1918 general election here in Ireland. So it told us that the document in question was intact, ratified and verified. It wasn't even, as my colleagues said a moment ago, it was not repealed or amended, in particularly as under a 32 county. And of course, when our island was partitioned, it was never talked about again. If I can put it that way, it was never really talked about it again.
That's right. That's when really the propaganda began, when the church, and now it's official. It's an organ of state used to manipulate, control, and partake in child trafficking. It's been doing it for many, many years in Ireland, which was proved in Tuam and everywhere else in Ireland. I think everywhere in the world, people can relate to Ireland's pre-Catholic church and child, the paedophilia and all this kind of stuff. But you can relate to it because a lot of these children have actually left Ireland through this system, you know, been taken from their mothers, right, taken from their fathers, taken from their families and brought all around the world. And they're only finding out that this is what they came from.
We know the Catholic Church is a transnational corporation. It's the biggest multinational child trafficking agency in history. And now we've got 5 minutes left. I want you folks to address kind of the another issue, which is that the grand jury, your grand jury, has the power to recommend the convening of a common law court. Do you see this as a real possibility from what you've looked at so far?
Absolutely.
It'd be more of an inevitability rather than a probability.
We're certainly generating a lot of support for it.
Good.
Our meetings are intense, and we've got some good people on board for it now. So we're doing very well. I mean, we are still young, but we know what's involved here, and we know what we need to accomplish. All these wrongs that everybody are suffering here in Ireland, we're trying to get redress on a point of law, on a point of common law.
And our meetings are growing week after week. It's more joining every week.
Kevin, can I just say something to you?
Yes.
Have your listeners heard of the Anglo-Irish tapes?
They probably not, no.
The night when the managers in the Bank of Ireland wanted to sell Ireland into the worst austerity of our lives was recorded. And it's up on YouTube now. It's called the Anglo-Irish tapes. David Drum and Sean Fitzpatrick laughing and joking about how they're going to con the government into giving them all this money to sell Ireland down the tubes. It's up on YouTube, and your listeners need to look at that.
Okay, if you send me the link, we'll put that up at itccs.org.
Okay, we'll find that link for you, Kevin. Yeah, it's an abomination of what they've done to us. Do you know what they spoke about in the conversation? Drum said to Fitzpatrick, we'll just pull a figure out of our arse. I'm sure by the time the Irish people wake up and the government wake up, we'll have sold them down the swamp.
And the conversation between what two individuals? Who were the two people talking?
Well, they were two CEOs of the bank in question. The Anglo-Irish bank in question.
Drum and Fitzpatrick.
The Anglo-Irish bank in question turned out to be one of the biggest speculators here in our country. Yeah. Property speculation, you know, the loans of property speculation, and as a result, we went into complete free fall here. This particular bank brought us to our knees, brought our nation to our knees, and they got all the support of the government at the time and successive governments since then.
Okay.
To meet their needs.
We've only got a minute left here. I wanted to ask you folks to come back on again when the grand jury has done more work. I know that you're looking at kind of a date in July to formally convene. But any final words for any of the listeners about what you're doing?
Can I just explain to your listeners about another group that have set up here in Ireland and it's against paedophilia in general, and they're called Child Protection Awareness, where they actually get these people to be decoys to take these paedophiles are on WhatsApp and they're enticing the children and looking for sex off these kids, 14, right. 12-year-old children. And these people go and beat them. They've actually picked up two paedophiles today alone. And they're actually on Facebook, Child Protection Awareness. If your listeners would like to go on and see how the Irish people are fighting back against paedophilia, they have their videos up from today.
Good stuff. Now, that relates to another issue we can address when you come back on, and that is enforcement, having your own common law peace officers to make the citizen arrests. There's no reason why you can't be making citizen arrests against known rapists, child raping priests, whoever, right? So that's a really good point. Thank you for that.
Well, one of them that they actually picked up today actually sent graphic pictures of having sex with a child.
It's disgusting.
We have all
anyway.
The evidence.
Folks, well, I really want to thank you. I'm sorry about the limitation. We only have an hour, of course, but I want you back on again soon with more updates. Thank you all for being with us today.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
Okay. Those are activists of the Irish Grand Jury calling in today from Dublin. And in the minute we have left, I just want to remind you folks two important dates coming up. Jorge Bergoglio, convicted war criminal, with a standing arrest warrant out for him, is speaking at the World Council of Churches gathering in Geneva on June 21st, a satanic ritual high point in Geneva, one of the satanic capitals of the world. There is a group in Zurich related to ITCCS that will be convening a counterconference and protest and attempt to make a citizen arrest against Jorge Bergoglio, a.k.a. Pope Francis. If you're interested, no people in Geneva, let us know. Write to ITCCS office at gmail.com and join in the fun. And, of course, the Irish folks will be working on the grand jury. And August 25th to 26th, Bergoglio in Dublin at Phoenix Park at a mass on Sunday, August 26th. So keep that on your agenda as well. There'll be more on that soon. So follow our work, itccs.org. We'll have more updates next week when we're back live. If you want to talk to us before then, write to me, thecommonland@gmail.com. Until then, folks, stay strong, stay clear, and order our books from Amazon.com. Put in the name Kevin Annett, and A-N-N-E-T-T, and you'll see all our books, especially one of our more popular items, the Common Law Training Manual. You can get all of that at Amazon.com. But especially follow the updates, itccs.org. Until next week, stay strong, stay clear. Thank you all.
There's a man walking round the island with a snake cane. Picked it up in time.